This is the sound of football.
On this week's Sound of Football, we give a hearty pat on the back to Leeds United after their surprising 1-0 win over Man United in the FA Cup. We look back at the last Premier League action of 2009 and assess the teams in the best and worst form. And we analyse the whys and wherefores of Owen Coyle's probable move from Burnley to Bolton. That's all on this week's Sound of Football. Ladies and gentlemen, a very warm welcome to the first Sound of Football podcast of 2009. My name's Chris Oakley, and with me, as ever, are two men whose footballing brains are faster than Ashley Cole in a 50-mile-an-hour zone. It's Terry DeFallon and Graham Sibley from Some People on the Pitch and the Onion Bag. Welcome aboard, fellas.
Hello.
Now then, before we rake over the Christmas New Year action from the Premier League over the last fortnight or so, let's start off with something altogether fresher in the memory, namely last weekend's FA Cup third round, which has just been going on 2 or 3 days ago or so. Now, as has been noted in a few places, the third round was a little short, possibly, on sort of big upsets and, you know, shocks and whatever. But there was one undeniable upset that stood out above all the others, and that was, of course, Leeds United's 1-0 win at Old Trafford, which was quite a tremendous achievement. It's the first time that Sir Alex Ferguson has lost a third round tie while he's been managing at Man United. So for that reason alone, it was a tremendous achievement. Much has been made, Terry, of Man United's inability to sort of deal with Leeds on the day in the context of their recent run of form. Do you think this is kind of this is all now starting to snowball into basically Man United not winning the title and maybe not having a successful season this time round?
Well, I mean, I think we've said on a number of occasions on this podcast that Chelsea are favourites, in our view anyway, to win the title, and I don't think anything has changed to change my view. I don't know how Man United would define a successful season. I suppose failure would be finishing fifth, wouldn't it? But I mean, I think anything between one and fourth, they could always say is qualified success, given the circumstances. They obviously haven't got the kind of money where they can go and sign the players that they need to replace the players that they don't have. Mm-hmm. And Ferguson is having to take a longer run-up of reassembling his latest sort of iteration of Manchester United, and I think that's perhaps what we saw on Sunday was perhaps a sort of symbolic of Alex Ferguson's problems, while at the same time not wishing to take anything away from Leeds United and Simon Grayson for what was a fantastic display, fantastic game, and Jermaine Beckford is as good as everyone says he is, quite clearly.
He still can do the business up front, that's for sure, if nothing else. Graham, as we just sort of mentioned there, Simon Grayson's doing tremendous work for Leeds there at the moment. They're sort of racing away at the top of the League One table. I guess it's inevitable that if he kind of continues this sort of form and this sort of success, I dare say that someone's going to come sniffing around for him, and that will be the end of Leeds' chances to do well. But what did you see the Leeds performance, and what do you make of it all?
I did see quite a lot of it actually, and I thought it was fantastic, and I thought it is very very sort of easy, I suppose, to fall into the trap and say, oh, what's happened with United, and instead of saying, well, good show on as far as Leeds were concerned. I mean, it wasn't just get a goal and park the bus, was it? It was a real, I think, robust competent performance, wasn't it? How you can describe it. And really, I mean, like, they looked for most of the latter stages of the game, the more likely to score, and I think they came closest, I think.
Certainly it's been noted in one or two places that kind of Rooney was sort of the only one really kind of remotely kind of competent on the day, and that people like, dare I say it, sort of singling people out for humiliation, but Michael Owen, oops, just slipped out there. were rather below par, but as you say, it was not really a case of ooh, got a lucky goal and somehow scraped through to the end. They were really good for their money, weren't they?
They were. They're really good value, and I have to sort of, like, you know, take my hat off and say, well done ITV for putting it on. when I saw it in the schedules, I thought, oh bloody hell, here we go. It's like, you know, it's just going to be another cakewalk for Man U, and then all of a sudden this performance turns up. And really makes you believe in the third round again, doesn't it?
Well it needed to, didn't it?
Certainly noted on some people on the pitch that it was a case of, oh, why are they following Man United just automatically, seemingly, and literally had to eat large portions of humble pie after that. I'm sorry, ITV, what do
well,
we
yes.
know?
Although, in fairness, they did televise that match because they do chase the green. They're a commercial broadcaster and they need the rating. Mm. So they are
a business, and they've got to get bums on seats. And putting Man U on the telly does that for them.
Does that precisely, as indeed, in fairness, does putting Leeds on the telly, because they're a nationally supported football club as well. So it was a huge fixture anyway you looked at it, and it just so happened that it was a fantastic game and a wonderful result in the spirit of the FA Cup, although albeit not a wonderful result for United supporters, obviously.
Yeah, I must say it did leave a nasty taste in my mouth, actually willing Leeds to win, but I soon got over it.
What happened when suddenly I wanted Leeds to win a football match? That was really bonkers. That was. I mean, it's just not like. I mean, because like, there's still plenty to hate about Leeds,
even though
they are in reduced circumstances. I mean, you know, the certain white bearded old gentleman who may or may not own the club, and just all the rest of the gubbins as well, isn't there? I mean, for people who don't like Leeds, there's, you know, that you shouldn't feel sorry for their reduced circumstances. There's still plenty of reasons for disliking them. But let's give them their day. They had a fantastic. It was a wonderful moment for them, I'm sure, under any circumstances. It wouldn't have mattered what division they're in. That would have been a fantastic result. Yeah. And it's particularly poignant, given that the supporters have had to put up with probably a great deal of rubbish over the last few years and a lot of torment, and a wonderful day for them. And if only other supporters could have days like that,
Quite. I'll tell you what, it was really odd looking at Twitter while the game was going on and all these kind of pro Leeds comments. I thought I'd slipped into the fourth dimension or something. I was like, what's going on? I don't understand this. Have I taken too much medication or something?
Yeah, you do wonder how long some of those tweeters had actually been following football. Because, I mean, it's like, what are you doing? It's Leeds, for God's sake.
What's got into your tiny mind? No, it was very impressive. And actually, as I say, Leeds were unbeaten in 15 games going into that match, so they certainly had the form going into it. And 42 league places separated the two of them, and that's the end of Man United's cup run for this year. Oh, it feels good to say that. and of course, they've got another. Sorry, Man U fans.
With all disrespect to our Manchester United supporters listening, we love you very much and keep listening.
That we've only been doing a podcast for a short time, and already we've had this rare opportunity to say Man United's cup run now ends in the third round. It's like too good to be true. Right, okay, just going to damp myself down with a cold flannel.
Don't do that.
So
not an air,
go through to round four, and they're away to Tottenham. What do you fancy of their chances there? Terry?
Failure,
eh?
Failure, yes. No, I don't think they could do it again. I think Tottenham are very good. Harry's a good manager. Tottenham are a very good side. And I don't think... I mean, in years gone by, that's a... Like, oh yes, Tottenham will lose that one. They'll slip up. That's a banana skin. But no, there'll be no complacency there by Tottenham. They'll field a full-strength side because they can. They've got no European football. They've got no significant injuries to talk about. I think that'll be not a comfortable, but it will be a win.
I'm not as confident. I think Tottenham will win, but I'm not as confident as Terry. I think it depends on how Tottenham's January goes. If they have a bit of a rough time in it and a couple of results don't go their way, then Harry might decide to rein the team in and not put a full strength team out for that one. But also as well, we have to remember is that Leeds may be short of a couple of players themselves by the time it gets to that stage as well.
Quite. Yes.
If Beckford goes to Newcastle, as I think is being widely reported.
Is that where he's likely to be going, is it? Newcastle?
That's so the rumour goes, yes.
That's a shame.
What just going back to your point there, do you think it'll be a comfortable victory for Tottenham, or maybe a narrow squeak out of interest?
No, I don't think it'll be a comfortable victory. I don't think it'll be comfortable, but I think they will win. It's a game they can easily lose, for sure. But if you're going to put a gun to my head, which you're not, obviously, but if you were to put a gun to my head, I would say Tottenham win.
Yeah, so would I, yeah.
Fair enough, too. Amongst the other highlights from the third round, Birmingham are very much in form. Birmingham are like the second best team on form at the moment, if you take the last six Premier League games. They were held 0-0 by Nottingham Forest, who are, I guess, the kind of equivalent in the Championship. They're also doing well at the moment. Good win for Preston, 7-0 over Colchester. A Jonathan Parkin hat-trick in that one. Coventry managed to hold Portsmouth 1-1. Away from home, they're actually at Portsmouth, so that was good. And I think, Terry, we should crave a little bit of indulgence on your behalf so we can kind of gloat about Crystal Palace's fortunes at the weekend. 2-1 away win at Sheffield Wednesday.
And an away tie to a Premier League football club, which is would have been nicer to have had a home tie, but that'll do for me. A great win, minus Victor Moses as well, who was not played. As to be spared being cup tied, as it's widely speculated that he will be gone soon, certainly in January. But so to win at a fellow Championship team, difficult fixture, without our best player, certainly without our best goal scorer, yes, fantastic. Wonderful to be in the hat again, and relatively optimistic that we can go to Wolves and do something. Because, Mick may, decide to rest, his first team. In which case, we might have a chance. So, who knows?
Well, I'm glad you two have got something to look forward to in the Cup anyway.
How did your leg go, by the way? sorry, mate.
I feel duty-bound to mention the fact that West Ham lost 2-1 at home to Arsenal. Right, now, let's just leave it at that, shall we? If we can move on. For what it's worth... For my opinion about how West Ham played, I thought West Ham are playing pretty good at the back, defending quite well, considering, but showing real weakness elsewhere, particularly up front. A lot of young players now kind of coming into the team to cover for the injured ones and the more experienced ones. And, a lot of people have been saying, Arsenal had the strength, even on the bench, to be able to bring in such good players. Wouldn't you agree, Graham?
I thought they picked... perhaps quite a weakened team to start off with, and it didn't work for Arsenal. It obviously didn't work because West Ham were the better team for about an hour. And as soon as they brought Diaby on, though, it completely changed. I mean, West Ham were playing a lot of play. They were playing a very, very sort of like tight midfield, and they were getting the better of it for a lot of it because they were pressing really hard. I mean, Barami was just everywhere. But I think as soon as Nasri and Diaby came on, it allowed Arsenal to pack out the midfield as well, and then they had a lot more control over it than Wilshere and Merida had, and I think it was really just a matter of time really for them to score, and then getting the second one was just a bonus, I think.
You could tell just Arsenal just had the strength to be able to just hold on and just hang in there until the gaps did appear, which
that there's an issue with the manager, with the West Ham manager? Do you think that perhaps he should have altered his tactics after they scored, or certainly after they conceded an equaliser? Chris, you said a few weeks ago on the Two-Footed Tackle podcast that you were concerned about Zola's tactical range. Do you think
yes. Yeah, I did indeed say that. I wasn't sure about whether he had the tactical range to deal with it. And that kind of... he's done that once or twice before as dear old Zola. And I am sort of doubting it. I mean, you could argue that actually West Ham would probably be getting better results this season if there were better players and there was money to spend on better players and I don't know, so on. But that's not helping. I wouldn't say that's the main reason why West Ham have been struggling this season, but it's not helping. But he still has a lot of respect amongst the fans and the people at the club, I think. So he's, I'm still happy for him to carry on. I think West Ham playing some good football at times. They just obviously need all that financial shenanigans to be sorted out. That would go a long way to resolving things.
They were under strength as well. I mean, like, they didn't have Cole up front. I mean, and mind you, I don't rate Tompkins at the back. He looks a bit of a liability back there.
Bless him.
He's not. I don't think he's the sort of player you want in a relegation scrap. But I think, like, you've got some good talent coming through. I mean, like, Freddie Sears got back, has gone back there. I mean, like, you know, he's been at Palace he played 20 times for Palace, so they must have liked what they saw there. And Collison as well, I think everyone's quite excited about him.
Collison's been very good actually, yes, this season. Yeah, and I think Noble was suspended, I think, if I remember right, wasn't he? I don't think he played. So yeah, so West Ham pretty much down to bare bones. But do you know what? I think there's a lot of teams in the Premier League that are getting down to bare bones. The good ones are the bad ones, and that's not really an excuse, sadly. So, but no, Arsenal did the job, and that's all grist to the mill for them. Whereas Liverpool struggled to beat Reading at Reading. It was 1-1 in that one, and more question marks about Liverpool. They were having a bit of a mini revival recently, but that's kind of nipped that in the bud. So all in all, several replays yet to come, and they will be going on next Tuesday and Wednesday, of which the main ones are Coventry against Portsmouth next Tuesday, Birmingham playing Forest next Tuesday, and that Liverpool match at Anfield will be next Wednesday. Not the most incident-packed third round you'll ever see, but certainly some interesting matches and some good performances there all round. That, I suspect, rounds up part one of this week's podcast. Coming up in part two, we'll be giving you a recap of all the goings-on over the Christmas and New Year period in the Premier League. Okay, part two of the Sound of Football podcast, show number 21, just in case you're doing a bit of back cataloguing and archiving at home, which I'm sure you always do just to pass away a quiet winter's evening. Last time we spoke to you was just before Christmas, and various things going on between then and now. Going into Christmas, Aston Villa, really, with a form team, they were doing well. I think they'd just beaten Man United before we packed up for our Christmas holidays, and unfortunately it all came a bit undone. Aston Villa lost both their games in the Christmas and New Year period, as did Stoke and Wolves and Portsmouth as well. Faring somewhat better, Man U, Man City, Arsenal and Liverpool all won their two games in that period. So they're all doing well. And, of course, Man City, the big story just before we broke, of course, was Roberto Mancini taking over from Mark Hughes. Graham, basically the situation is that... so far, Mancini's got, I think it's three wins, isn't it, out of three, and has managed as well as that to keep clean sheets in all those games. Impressed so far, or I think I know the answer to this one, or are you prepared to give him a bit more time for a more balanced view?
I think keep Man City keeping clean sheets is actually probably the most impressive thing out of there. I mean, like, everyone said when he arrived that he's got a nice easy bedding in period.
Start. Yeah.
But then again, you know, if they're games that people feel you should win, if you don't win them, then you know, you're making life a hell of a lot more difficult for yourself for when the real tests come. So these are the sort of games that, you know, Hughes was drawing. So the jury still is out on Mancini. He's still got to do something, you know, quite special to hold on to that top four place.
But not a bad start.
But no, not a bad start. I think there was some interesting games over Christmas, and it did sort of like start separating the league out. If you look at the league table now, I think there's something like about 9 points between 8th and 10th, I think. So you could see a real gap opening up between the top and bottom half. That said, I just left the match between Fulham and Stoke on the telly, and Stoke were 3-0 up against Fulham there. So
were they? I didn't get a chance to check that.
Yeah, they were at half time, so it looked absolutely rotten there as well. So
it's 3-2 now.
Sorry, Terry, go on.
It's 3-2 now.
3-2. Oh my word! Yes. It's the greatest comeback since Lazarus. Yes,
yes. Yeah. Duff and Dempsey are testing Lazarus's record.
Well, actually, it's interesting because
there can only be a few more minutes to go there.
At half time, Jeff Stelling was mentioning to Alan Kirbishley, who was saying about the Peterborough Cardiff game the other week about
he was going on about that on Saturday as well.
Yeah.
In the hope that it would because he predicted that the Preston FA Cup match would be a close affair, and it was 7-0, and he used the Cardiff Peterborough match as saying, well, you know, Colchester could still come back from 4-0.
If they carry on playing till next Christmas, possibly.
Mm.
In terms of sort of current form, just a slight diversionary tactic. If you look at say the last six games, as we mentioned a moment ago, the Birmingham were doing pretty well. That's before tonight's game, which has finished 3-2 to Stoke. Basically, Arsenal, top team at the moment. They won five and drew one of their last six games. So that'll please you no end, I'm sure, Graham. And Birmingham second best, and Man City third. At the other end, though, Blackburn, Sunderland and Burnley didn't win any of their last six games at the end of last year, so a bit of a worry. And now, of course, we have the breaking story, Terry, that Owen Coyle looks like he's probably going to be leaving Burnley to join Bolton.
Yes.
What are your views on that?
I'm puzzled by that one. I am genuinely having trouble finding out. I mean, it's Bolton. I know that Owen Coyle played for Bolton. I'm sure he has a degree of affection for that, but I am finding it a bit difficult to reason why he shouldn't just stay at Burnley, where, I mean, unless of course they're offering him a truckload of cash, which is possibly the reason.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, it's worth bearing in mind that he turned down Celtic, and he's kind of turned down Scotland as well. Mm. Although I don't think he was ever officially approached. But I understand. But I mean, the story was is that he certainly dismissed any sort of like suggestion that he'd go there, and that may be based on some kind of informal approach, perhaps. Mm. He may well think, well, look, this is my third sort of like concrete offer in a space of a few short months. You know, how many times am I going to turn down these gigs I'm getting from other clubs? There is much to say about Bolton. If he can turn Bolton around, then modern stadium. You know, there's no reason why, you know, they can't sustain themselves in the Premier League. Hmm. Maybe he just feels that, you know, it's a good club to develop his Premier League managerial career. And the problem is that these jobs, when they come up, they come up. And if you're in the frame at the time, you have a decision to make. Do you go or do you stay loyal with your club? But if you stay loyal with your club, how do you know you're not going to get booted out in another 3 or 4 months? And how do you know the club...
Will the fans go a bit nasty on you if they suspect that there's something going on? Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And how do you know that opportunity to go to that club isn't going to come along again? You know, it's really difficult for managers to make these kind of calls, because you can't sort of like say, well, no, you know what, I think I'll give here another 6 months, year, see what I do with Burnley, or at least see out the season, see if we can make it work. But you must think to yourself, well, no, this is, he's offering me a truckload of cash, probably a bit of money in the transfer market. It's a nice stadium. It's not far from where I live. I've got connections with the club. You know,
well, that's the thing. I mean, I think he has sort of quietly confided the fact that Bolton are likely to have a bigger budget than Burnley have at the moment. So that's going to be one sort of carrot that's going to be sort of dangling there for him. And as you say, it's almost inevitable that they're offering him a lot more money. And he did play for them a fair while ago. And
but it is is it wise for Bolton, though? I mean, this is a... I mean, Coyle is clearly an up-and-coming manager. But, I mean, we were talking about tactical range earlier on. I mean, if you look at the way Burnley play at home, they're fantastic. But away from home, they're a shambles. I mean, this is possibly because the players aren't up to it, or it could be because the manager's not up to it. I mean, I think that there's the other side of this to look at, and it isn't just a straightforward as saying, oh, well, Owen Coyle is, you know, why is he going there? You know, what's it? It's like, why are Bolton like going for him? Why aren't they going for a more experienced manager? I don't know.
I think they've got to buy the fans back. I think.
Well, that's it. I was just going to say. Yeah.
I think that's what it is. It's the owner trying to think, right, okay, I need to make a popular choice here rather than the correct choice.
Well, I think that's it. Sorry, go on, Terry.
Well, that's fine. If there's a discernible drop in attendances and it's affecting his bank balance, you know, and because the fans are staying away because they're so unhappy with the team and its manager, then I could understand them sort of like saying, well, we need to make a popular signing who also happens to be a good manager. But is that actually happening now? I mean, to what extent is he simply trying to give himself a quieter life? And, you know, is he really acting in the best interest of the club by doing that? I mean, what's it going to do? Are Bolton's attendances going to increase markedly, you know, as a consequence of Owen Coyle's arrival? I don't know whether that's the case.
How much money is going to be left over after they pay off Megson and they pay off Burnley?
Yes, they may have a bigger budget, but is it big enough to be able to cope with all of that? Yeah.
Yes, and if they're spunking it on managerial compensation for other clubs and for sacked managers, it's wasted money.
There's certainly a school of thought which goes that the last time Bolton fans really enjoyed the style of football that was being played was when they had Bruce Rioch as manager. He had developed a pretty sort of silky smooth kind of style of getting the players to play, and then following him you had sort of people like obviously Sam Allardyce, who was renowned for his sort of Route One style, and then when he left, Sammy Lee sort of stepped in and he pretty much just carried on, only was less successful at even making that efficient, and I think the story goes that Phil Gartside did recommend Owen Coyle to Burnley as being the sort of decent chap who knows his stuff, who'd make for a good manager, and Burnley then sort of took them up on the offer and said, right, well, we'll have him. And then I think after the event, having got Gary Megson in, they thought, oh, bugger, maybe we should have had him instead. As Graham, I think, has pretty much sort of nailed there, that the impression I'm getting is that they're just thinking, right, let's get the fans back on side. Let's see if we can play some football that people at least enjoy watching. Hopefully the results will follow on as well. And then it will be sort of hunky-dory. But, you know, as you said, Terry, the Burnley have sort of only cracked the sort of home form aspect of this, so kind of some question marks there about how much they can kind of carry that on. How long if Coyle does get the job, how he can transfer the skills of the players into home at good home and away form.
Mm. Well, I mean, we're going to find out, I think, aren't we? Because I mean, it does appear very much that it's going to happen.
Crossing the T's and dotting the I's at the moment.
I mean, maybe Burnley are playing a bit of hardball, but it does appear that we are going to find out. So it does. I mean, it makes for another interesting subplot in the, in the second half of the Premier League
managerial merry-go-round. Yes,
indeed.
I think they said that the only reason Bolton could make an approach was because Owen Coyle, when he joined Burnley, he stipulated that he specified a clause in his contract that said anyone offering over £3 million in compensation is fair game to come and have a word with me about their plans. So Burnley just sort of said, okay, if you want to have a chat with him, fine. There's nothing we can do, and I think they are resigned to losing him.
And so, what that means for Burnley, of course, who knows? They have to find a new manager, and after a very good start, or certainly a promising start to the season.
It's a shame, isn't it? I mean, it's taken them that long to get back into the top flight again, and now having done so, they're about to lose the man who's helped them do it. And of course, there is that old sort of chestnut about, you know, whether once you are in the top flight, whether you then boot out the presumably inexperienced coach and bring in someone who then can then move the club forward. Yeah. But it makes you wonder who they're going to pick, you know, Mark Hughes?
Glenn Roeder. He's going to turn up again.
Ricky.
Yeah, he's due for a revival, isn't he?
Ricky Sprazier.
We'll call this the Lazarus episode. So there we are. Megson is now sort of history. So I guess this looks like damage limitation on the part of Bolton and an attempt to sort of turn things around, having had a few dodgy men in charge. I'll probably be sued for saying that, but nobody knows my address.
We do. We know.
Other disparaging things. No.
We know his address and we'll sell it to the highest bidder.
So there we go. So that's a kind of a brief recap on what's been going on in the Premier League. Suffice to say that Chelsea is still at the top, 2-point lead over United. Arsenal coming up on the rails, and there's still the battle for fourth spot, because it looks like Liverpool are going to struggle to maintain their place in the top four, but I'm sure we'll be discussing that in due course in future weeks. So there we go. Now then, suffice to say, coming up on the horizon, as if this wasn't a big enough year with the World Cup coming up in the summer, we've got the African Nations Cup coming up next weekend as we speak. That starts on, I think it's Sunday, and hopefully we'll be doing a bit of a review on all the happenings in that in the weeks to come. When we do our next podcast, hopefully next Monday, and apologies for not publishing the podcast this week on a Monday, technical issues, that's all you need to know. But if we go live next Monday, then we may only have one or two games to report on there, but we will keep you up to date with what's happening over in Angola. Let's face it, half the Premier League's over there at the moment, playing for one country or another, so there should be some familiar faces to follow and all of that. So I think that's pretty much all we can talk about really for this particular episode. Welcome back to The Sound of Football 2010, a new year and lots of football to cover in due course. Suffice to say, you can subscribe to our podcast as ever via iTunes, and don't forget to leave us some feedback. We do thrive on such things.
We do.
Especially if it's positive feedback.
Yes.
And you can catch us at the Sound of Football blog site, Some People on the Pitch, The Onion Bag, and don't forget to drop in on our Sound of Football Facebook fan page as well, and there you can interact with other decent people that follow the podcast. But for now, I reckon that's show 21 finished and done with. Thanks very much indeed for listening. From the three of us, until next week, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.